Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Flagship Podcast. I am Chip Brown of Horns247.com, joined by my teammate, my partner in crime at Horns247.com, the one and only Eric Henry. Eric, fresh back from Charlotte, North Carolina, where the Texas Longhorns basketball team did not get out of the first weekend of the tournament. Although it was close, they beat Colorado State, looked good, handled their business. Although we were seeing some little cracks in the foundation because we weren't getting the scoring from Dylan Dazoo and Max Asemus that Texas had been getting. And then they run into Rick Barnes and the Tennessee Volunteers in a kind of unwatchable game from a baskets being made standpoint. But it was a one-point game with 34 seconds left. And Texas just couldn't get it done. Max Asemus, Dylan Dazoo combined to go 7 of 28 shooting in that game. That was tough. That's 25% shooting if you're keeping it home. Both guys struggled in the NCAA tournament. But Texas women are in the Sweet 16. We will talk about that. They're taking on Gonzaga out in Portland. I don't like that because that's kind of a home game for the Gonzaga Bulldogs. But we'll get to that. And spring football continues. We are four practices in on spring football for the Texas Longhorns. Of course, spring game, April 20th. Eric, we had a chance to take in some spring football. Let's start there. We'll get to basketball. But spring football, I mean, a lot of moving parts for this football team. Steve Sarkisian sounds like he's feeling good about the depth of his team. He likes the team's length, likes their speed, but he's looking for thermostats, not thermometers. Eric.
Chip Brown. Oh, man, it's great to be back from Charlotte. We talk all the things we got going on the 40 acres. Men's hoops fall short. Women's hoops pushing on. Spring football, and I guess...
I forgot to mention Kevin Durant was in the house for the Texas women. That was pretty cool.
You were there in the house covering the game, and I think we're going to start with a little spring ball. Chip, before I launch kind of into, you know, what my observations were from day four, practice four, taking place, DKR, Texas Memorial Stadium, the Mecca, some folks would say, college football. I'm just throwing it out there. You know, I'm only one man. You know, I'm not making any assertions. Chip, this is a genuine question. Does Steve Sarkisian, does he look any more relaxed in this spring than he has in previous springs? Because I think that was the tone that I feel like I've gathered from day one and especially day four of spring ball. He is just at ease. And I think there's good reason to feel at ease going back to day one when I asked him about just the depth across the board. And he talked about, you know, the sheer numbers of players on this team. And not only that, but from a position to position perspective, feeling as if this team is as deep as it has been in the 4 years you've been here. So I just want to ask you really quick before I kind of, you know, jump into some thoughts on day four. Does he feel any more relaxed than maybe he has in previous springs from your
eyes? I think so. He feels, you know, they set the target last year. They hit the target. So that's a confidence builder, I think, for Steve Sarkisian as a head coach. because he had not done that in his previous stints at Washington and USC. He hadn't won a conference championship. And so there was, you know, the naysayers would say, well, wow, Steve Sarkisian, what's he done? Well, now he's won a conference championship and he's been to the college football playoff and he's recruiting his you-know-what off. So, yeah, I think he does seem to feel like he's in charge and confident, and I don't know if relaxed is the word, because as a head football coach, I don't know if you're ever relaxed, but I think he's confident in feeling like things are moving in the right direction.
That's fair, yeah. And relaxed, maybe at ease, you know, maybe not relaxed, but confident, right? I mean, that just really stuck out to me. I spent the fourth practice looking at the running backs, Chip, and, you know, it's interesting this time last year, I wasn't here at the moment, but I can speak as to fall football, right? Big 12 Media Days was my first assignment here, 24/7 Sports, and one of the major questions was the running back spot. Who's going to replace Bijan Robinson, right? Is it going to be running back by committee? Is it going to be a bell cow? And Steve Sarkisian said, you know, we'll figure that out, whether it's going to be a running back by committee or just one guy. It ended up working itself out pretty darn good for the Horns in the form of Jonathan Brooks, who, you know, certainly was, before his injury, in the running, maybe a Dark Horse Heisman candidate, but certainly a Doak Walker Award candidate there before his injury. And now you got to feel pretty good. You lose JB, but you have last year's season opening back in CJ Baxter and season ending back CJ Baxter. And I think Jaden Blue, right? We've talked about it a ton, but you got to feel good about his upside. But Chip, once upon a time, you know, a much lower level of football than this, but, you know, I was a 17, 18 year old freshman embarking on spring camp, Jacksonville University. I can tell you right now, I didn't look like Christian Clark or Jared Gibson. Those guys look like grown men. And I wrote about it. The big takeaway was just the depth of that room. I think you got to feel that's something that, And we've talked about it in our last episode, right? You know, in terms of, or maybe it was two episodes ago, I can't remember which, but where do you feel, you know, in terms of the confidence level, offense, defense? You take a look at that running back room, and despite the fact that you lose A.D. Mitchell, you lose Jordan Whittington, you lose Xavier Worthy, J.T. Sanders, I don't know about you, man, but I feel confident in that running back room paired with pretty much a returning slew of offensive linemen from last year's group. I think that paired with Quinn Ewers and then the talent of this receiver room, it just makes for, you know, real optimism in terms of that offensive unit. But yeah, man, that running back room, CJ Baxter looks thicker, his lower half. Steve Sarkisian talked about the progression of year one to year two in terms of running back. The thing is now, of course, working in pass pro, knowing what to do as far in terms of pass protection, in terms of knowing what to do as opposed to guessing, but also making that progression as far as breaking tackles, staying upright, you know, running violently. We all see CJ Baxter, 6'1", 218 pounds, certainly got the frame to do it right. But, you know, then it's becoming that guy who's like Jonathan Brooks, who's like Bijan Robinson, who's like Roshan Johnson in terms of forcing missed tackles at this level. You got to be able to make a guy miss and get into the second level of defense. And then you pair that with a Jaden Blue. I mean, even a Trey Weisner, right, who impressed last year on special teams. So, yeah, that was my big takeaway from the fourth practice, was just looking at this running back room and thinking, okay, you know, regardless of Chip, last year, the season opened, against Rice, and, you know, it was a little bit of a feeling out process. We saw things take off against Alabama, a little bit of feeling out process against Wyoming. For whatever reason, I think, and of course, you know, this year's schedule, obviously, in the non-conference has Michigan in it, right? But not the same Michigan team as last year. I think, Chip, in my mind, if, and we're still a long ways away from August, but if for whatever reason there's a feeling out process with an Amari Nye Black or Matthew Golden, Silas Bolden, Isaiah Bond, I feel confident in the fact that this offense can stay on schedule by just turning around, handing it to a sophomore CJ Baxter and a junior Jaden Blue, giving him 25, 30 carries and saying, hey, go do your thing, and we're going to be all right. So that's my big takeaway early on.
They might have won a national championship if they'd have just kept handing it off to Jaden Blue and CJ Baxter, the way that they started that Sugar Bowl game you know, first quarter, averaging 12 yards a carry. It's pretty good. Michigan just kept running it, and they ran for 300 yards in a national championship. So, yeah, I agree with you, Eric. I look at this running back room, and I'm a big fan of Jaden Blue. I mean, I just think he's come a long way. Remember, this is a guy who chose not to play his senior year in high school, and then he had second thoughts, and the coach of his high school team left it up to a vote of the team. They said no. So he came to Texas with some questions about, is he a good teammate? Blah, blah, blah. All we've heard about Jaden Blue is he's maturing. He's accountable. He's putting in the work. I was sold when Tashard Choice compared him to Jahmyr Gibbs at the Sugar Bowl. I was, you know, me being a Lions fan, and I wasn't even that sold on Jahmyr Gibbs until later in the season. I was kind of hoping they'd take Jalen Carter from Georgia. But anyway, I just think Jaden Blue is really, and he's draft eligible after this year. I think he's kind of the veteran in the room now. Even though C.J. Baxter was the starter to start the 2023 season, a decision I'm still not 100% sure who and why that was made, because of just how productive Jonathan Brooks had been, not only in high school at Hallettsville, but also when he got into games for Texas. And then he immediately showed that he's got that contact balance and ability to force missed tackles, which is the next step for both Jaden Blue and C.J. Baxter. And I felt like Sarkisian was kind of talking it into existence after the fourth practice this week when he said, you know, C.J. Baxter is at his best when he runs violently. Because we saw him run violently toward the end of the year. Sure. We didn't see it at all times during the year. So, and look, got to cut it loose. Got to be ready for, you know, the contact and to fight through it. So I think, and I'm glad you mentioned Trey Wisner, because Trey Wisner, from what I'm hearing, all he does is run violently. So watch out for Trey Wisner, because, you know, he is definitely the unsung guy in that room. We know Savion Red came in a little heavy. We know that Christian Clark and Jarrett Gibson are really guys to watch, because Tashard Choice has compared Jarrett Gibson to Roschon Johnson and Christian Clark to Bijan Robinson. So with those kind of comparisons, and I trust Tashard Choice, that guy's done nothing but he recruited Jahmyr Gibbs to Georgia Tech before he got transferred off to Alabama. Tashard Choice knows what he's looking at. He knows what he's recruiting. There's, I think, a lot of confidence that Texas fans should have in that running back room. And honestly, the running back room to me is a little more proven than the receiver room, because remember, Sarkisian, he wants his receivers to know the whole offense, the concepts, so that you're not just running plays. You know where you fit and why you fit that way and why you have to do everything to the detail. And those guys are proving themselves right now to the Texas coaches. Isaiah Bond, Matt Golden, Jontae Cook, DeAndre Moore, Ryan Wingo, on and on. It's a talented room, but we got to see who can master all the details of what Steve Sarkisian wants. But I think he feels good about the leadership, Eric. And that's important, because you lost some big time dudes. And from a leadership standpoint, I mean, from Jalen Ford and Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy and even Jaren Thompson in the secondary, Ryan Watts. You got to have the new voices emerge, and the team has to acknowledge and accept those voices So, but it does feel like Steve Sarkisian, who said, you know, look, thermostats, they set the temperature. Thermometers just read the temperature. We need thermostats. I think he mentioned Alfred Collins, Baron Sorrell, Ethan Burke. And I thought, you know, I mean, they feel really good about Anthony Hill wherever he plays. And so, you know, some of that leadership is emerging. Malik Muhammad is another guy we've heard as an emerging leader on the defensive side. So, and Trey Moore, what did you think of Steve Sarkisian's kind of extended comments about Trey Moore, the UTSA? He's a junior at Texas, transfer at the edge position.
Yeah, Chip, I mean, I don't think the praise didn't surprise me because obviously I saw Trey Moore play for, you know, a season, his first full season as a starter at UTSA before I took the job here. Didn't see him last year as extensively, but knew he's a player. I guess, again, I honestly want to say I wasn't surprised because you never know, Chip. I mean, listen, as someone who covered G5 football for 5 years, and I guess three of those were in the transfer portal, really two were in the transfer portal era, the prime transfer portal era. Chip, I've seen so many kids who transfer from your Western Kentuckys and your FIUs and your UTSAs and your UAPs up to the, you know, Power Five level. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, right? So I think you can never say it's going to be a sure thing that a kid transfers to the Power Five level and it's suddenly hitting the ground running. But with Trey Moore, and you know, for viewers and listeners, I'm working on an extended piece on Trey Moore, reaching out to some of the offensive line coaches of the American Athletic Conference and CUSA just to kind of get their background on Trey Moore. But I had a front row seat, Chip, his first game that he broke out, 2.5 sacks against FIU. Now, quite frankly, just being transparent, that FIU offensive line is certainly not a measuring stick that I would use in comparison to the SEC. You know, that was an FIU offensive line that was in flux all year, even for the Group of Five level. But with
that's been the question on Trey Moore, is that the 14.5 sacks he had last year, a lot of them were piled up against the tomato cans on the UTSA schedule.
Yeah, yeah. If memory serves me correct, he had 3.5 against UAB, which that one, I will put some stock in that UAB has been one of the more, you know, solid programs in the Group of Five for a while. I want to say he had 2 against FAU, if memory serves me correct. Of course, Tom Herman and company, that was one again that, you know, teams that decided their record wasn't great, but at least a measure of stability. I'm just here to tell you, as someone who covered FIU, I mean, that offensive line was – Chip, they were taking guys from, you know, BMI in the Citadel, right? And put them on the offensive line. So not quite, you know, Georgia's of the world, right? But nevertheless, and I think I said this to you, what stood out to me, the athleticism and the spin move, that Dwight Freeney-esque kind of spin move. I don't want to, you know, compare him to, you know, an all pro, but at least at that level, those were the things that stood out to me. So to your question, what I think of that, you know, I think it's great, right, that he's at least making impact on this staff and with the head man immediately with his work ethic, right? Because I think everything else will come. I think him being in the weight program with Tory Becton will come. I think I said this on last podcast. UTSA fought for years to get, you know, a truly Division I strength facility there for all their programs. I think they call it their race facility. They just got to, you know, I think Trey Moore only spent 1 year in that facility, right? So him having, you know, what will be at his disposal at UT, that will certainly help him. But listen, if we're just talking about stockpiling talent and having guys, I don't know about you, Chip, but if listen, Baron Sorrell, Ethan Burke are going to be your guys, right? You know, for a fact. And we're going to see where guys like, you know, Colton Vasek and others, you know, Jamon Tapp, you know, guys where they kind of fit. But if you're just telling me, based on what I saw at the Group of Five level, if you're telling a guy like Trey Moore, hey, let's take our time with him, give him a role as a pass rusher alongside a Anthony Hill or, you know, maybe even a Colin Simmons, as guy, we'll see where that plays out. Trey Moore can do that in my mind. You know, if we're not asking him to play 50 something snaps against Division One, or I shouldn't say Division One, you know, Power Five SEC level tackles per game. But situationally, like a Chris Ross was, like a Jet Bush was, he can do that in my mind. So that's encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah. And Colin Simmons, continue to hear good things about him and what's not to like. Anyone who's watched his film out of Duncanville knows that kid's got bend. He's got the ability to carry weight, dip under offensive tackles, shoulders, and get to the quarterback. And usually when you have that at the 6A level in Texas high school football over and over and over again, you can get it to translate. He was a five-star for a reason, and we've not heard anything to diminish that. So that's a impressive room. It's the you know, you mentioned all the names. I mean, it's a battle. So Justice Finkley in there. I mean, so that's going to be something. Another name, another veteran transfer who got mentioned from Steve Sarkisian with some effort. Well, I mean, he brought up Andrew Makuba as a guy who's wired right, who is a good teammate, a leader, a guy he's really excited about, who can play both the slot corner and the safety position. We saw his feet. He's got good feet. I think he's going to be a really good coverage safety, or if he's playing the slot corner, I think he's going to be a better coverage safety than what Texas has had. We'll see. Jaron Thompson's at Auburn now. But I think you're feeling good about the fact that those guys are getting mentioned as transfers. We asked Sarkisian about Jalen Catalan last year, but it was never as sort of, I don't think the comments were as deep or heartfelt from Sarkisian at any point about Jalen Catalan than what we've heard from Steve Sarkisian so far about Trey Moore and Andrew Makuba. So I think they feel really good about what they're seeing from those guys after winter conditioning through for spring practices. And obviously there's tape of those guys playing. One question I wanted to get into, Eric, was the command of the quarterbacks. Steve Sarkisian talked about the command that Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning, because they're the guys who've been in the program, know the players on this team. Trey Owens, early enrollee, head swimming, learning everything. But the command that Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning have to have, I thought, when Steve Sarkisian said that, because those quarterbacks are now having to help bring along these receivers who are new to the Texas offense or are new to getting more reps or vying for a potential starting role if you're a Jonte Cook or a DeAndre Moore or Ryan Niblett. I think that's the next layer for Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning. You know, Quinn had to be accountable to himself last year. It was this time last year that he apologized to Texas fans for not coming through in his first year in 2022, which I thought was amazing. Like, wow. You don't have to put that on yourself. I mean, just go grind. But he did, and then he answered the bell, led his team to a conference championship. But now he's got to bring along receivers, Eric, and it sounds like he's up to the task.
Chip, I don't think that's something that we can understate. I think it's one of those things that we kind of gloss over when we talk about quarterback play and quarterbacks in general, right, Chip? It's one thing to go in there and call the plays. It's one thing to go out there and, you know, be the quarterback. It's another thing to have command of the offense, to, you know, call the protections, shift protections, put guys in the right place. And more importantly, or maybe most importantly, Chip, when those guys look at you in the huddle, they're like, all right, it's time to shut up. That's who's doing it, right? Those things matter. And again, I think maybe we kind of gloss over that. I'll speak in specificity with Arch here, because with Quinn, obviously he kind of spoke about it last year, and Steve Sarkisian kind of spoke about it last year, feeling more confident in being, you know, his guys, his team, and being emboldened, right? When you're named the starter, what comes with that, as opposed to going to it with a quarterback competition. But with Arch, I mean, it's so easy to forget. We're talking about, you know, all world, five-star recruit, the whole nine, but he was a freshman like everyone else, right? He's trying to get his feet wet. He's trying to get adjusted to college and whatnot. And
trying to find his ID.
Trying to find his ID, right? All those things. Now, you know, out the window, right? Seemingly he's walking in there and like, all right, he's keeping pace. He's seen what it's supposed to look like with Quinn Ewers, and certainly, you know, has his family lineage you can lean on as well, as far as knowing what it's supposed to look like. But Chip, those things matter. I truly believe they do. I've heard, you know, you gave the excellent line that you said Barry Switzer said, you know, about, you know, hey, who's got the best quarterbacks going to win the game? And I've heard it, you know, from even my time around guys like Butch Davis and you know, other G5 coaches at the time who've had success. I mean, even, you know, a guy like Trent Dilfer, when he was, you know, getting the job there at UAB. It's like there's a difference between going in there and having a guy who's just calling the plays and is listening, you know, kind of regurgitating what the coach is telling him versus being in command. I mean, Chip, we can liken that to even our jobs, right? There's a difference between you go through and you're kind of feeling out the job versus you know what to do and you feel confident about it and you're executing, right? So don't think that's a small thing you can just gloss over here. And, you know, now year three for Quinn, and I guess Quinn's fourth year of college football. Man, that's
And another name, like, I think. Well, go ahead.
I was gonna say, man, 4 years of Quinn Ewers, like yesterday, he was the kid enrolling in Ohio State. So, right, just gonna finish that thought. Go ahead, Chip.
Yeah. You know, one of the other names I think Texas fans are curious about is Cam Williams, who's vying to take over at right tackle for Christian Jones, who is getting ready for the NFL draft next month. And Steve Sarkisian pointed out that Cam's done a good job with his weight and his movement, even at 6'5", 360, which is what he's listed at. Remember, he was at one point 374, and he's got it down to 360. Steve Sarkisian's quote was, "Cam's done a great job. You know, his weight has really come down. I referenced it to him today on the field. He's moving really well. Cam has really matured that way in the value of keeping his weight manageable to where he can play to the best of his ability." And he talked about the 76 snaps that he got in the start against Kansas State. So Cam Williams is definitely a player to watch this spring as he tries to move in to replace Christian Jones on the offensive line. Your thoughts?
It's interesting, Chip. First off, you know, agree with everything you said there as far as kind of, you know, where you feel at this point with Cam Williams. I guess, Chip, and I hate to do it in the form of a question, but the offensive line, in my mind, at least in my experience, is only as good as your weakest link. And in this case, I do wonder, listen, all the talent in the world, you know, it certainly has the potential to be that guy. I guess I just wonder, and I don't know if you feel the same way, if you saw any glimpses of anything just, you know, from previous to now that give you confidence. And this is why where I'm going with this, Chip, is, you know, Christian Jones is someone who you can speak to better than I, certainly took a little while to put it all together, right? But once he did, you knew you had a stalwart, you know, there at tackle. And I guess I just wonder, I mean, I'm not trying not to make a mountain out of a molehill, but when you know you have veterans, Jake Majors, you know, Kelvin Banks, you know, Hayden Connor, the list goes on. But an offensive line is only as strong as their weakest link. So I guess, you know, maybe if we revisit this conversation this time and come fall, I'd be really interested to see what the conversation is there. Because if that's a, listen, solidified, lock, we know we're going, then you feel great. If that conversation's iffy, you get a different feeling, Chip. And maybe that's just me. I don't know what your thoughts.
No, it's true. And I think the different feeling is if Cam Williams is not as consistent as they were hoping, as the coaches were hoping, then, you know, we've talked about it and Kyle Flood mentioned it at the Sugar Bowl that Hayden Connor could move over to right tackle and Neto Umezulu could move in or Cole Hudson at left guard where Hayden Connor has lined up the last couple years. So that's a real thing. And that's something that we need to continue to watch because, you know, I thought it was interesting too, that DJ Campbell right at the beginning of practice yesterday was the one called into the center of the entire team to lead them in their stretching. And that's an honor the coaches bestow to a player. And I think that's a good sign because DJ Campbell's a guy whose confidence seemed to go up as the year went on last year. And now he was the number one interior offensive line recruit in the country the same year that Calvin Banks was the number one offensive tackle recruit in the country. And they were in the same class with Cam Williams and Cole Hudson and Connor Robertson. So it was a talented offensive line group. And now they're taking over as the dominant, you know, men of action on that offensive line and voices. So that's definitely a storyline to watch as we advance. All right, Eric, anything else on football you feel we need to touch before we kind of wrap up men's basketball and give some love to the women's basketball team?
No, let's dive into it because certainly a lot to get to between both teams.
Yeah, and you were in Charlotte and great coverage there from you as the Longhorns handled Colorado State and then just couldn't quite come up with the answers when they had to have them. I mean, again, defensively, you love what Texas was able to do to Tennessee in that game. Again, a 1-point game with 34 seconds left. It just didn't come together. Tough night. You know, just really, you feel for Dylan DeZoo and Max Asemus because they played so well all year and they clearly did not finish the way they wanted to finish the season. If you look at both of their numbers down the stretch, you had Dylan DeZoo was 11 of 44 shooting in his last three games against the loss to K-State in the Big 12 tournament. He was 4 of 18? It just 11 of 44, 25% shooting in the last three games and 2 of 15 from 3-point range, which is, he was averaging over 50% from 3-point range for most of the season. And then Asemus goes 8 of 25 shooting. That's 32%. 6 of 22 from 3, which is 27% in his last two games against Colorado State and Tennessee. And look, those opposing teams are trying to take those guys away, but I thought Dylan DeZoo had a lot of good looks that just didn't go down for him in the Tennessee game, Eric.
Chip, unfortunately, and I wrote this, the story of the Tennessee game, it should be, man. The story of the Tennessee game should be the fact that this team, after Rodney Terry preached over and over and over again, wanting his teams to be defensive led and everything, starting with their defense and not letting their defense affect their offense. And how many, I don't want to call them cliches, but talking points as Rodney Terry used, starting with defense. The story of the 2023-24 Texas Longhorns should be the fact that they found a way for back-to-back games in the NCAA tournament to put forth their finest defensive performances. And unfortunately, the story is going to be when their scores they needed the most Max Asemus, Chip. I mean, a guy who's been a March Madness darling his entire career, right? I wrote about it. Averaged 20 plus in March for his career. Dylan Dazou, coming off of last March, where he was a scorer, averaging almost 17 points a game. That should have been the story of how they finally put it together defensively and found a way, Chip, slow Dalton Connect. 4 points in the first half. 1 of 8 shooting. And unfortunately, the story is going to be missed opportunities. They could not find, whether it was Dazou or Asemus, and Chip, we talked about it all year, their inability of this team to have a consistent third scorer, a guy who, you know, when Asemus and Dazou aren't having their best nights, someone to step up. They didn't get it. You know, Tyrese Hunter didn't have his best. I mean, well, you know what? He put you this way. I guess if we're comparing Tyrese Hunter nights compared to the regular season, it's about as good as you could have asked for, right? I think he shot 54% for the field. Kendall Weaver had, 11 points, I believe. Maybe it was 13, I think 11 in the second half.
13 points on 3 of 7 shooting, but 6 of 6 from the free throw line.
Right. So 13 overall, 11 the first half. Just didn't get enough. So to your point, yeah. We spoke with Dylan postgame. He said, yeah, what's frustrating is those are looks I would take all year. And I felt like I hit those shots all year. Rodney Terry said, nah, those are the guys who got us here. We're going to put the ball in their hands each time. Just couldn't knock down shots. So definitely, I think the biggest thing is we probably, you know, I don't know how much further you want to go into the Tennessee game because we're going to transition to what this offseason looks like. But the feeling that was palpable in that locker room, Chip, was just the sense of finality with this group. You're losing Asemus. You're losing Dazou. You're losing Brock. IT Horton's gone. You know, Caden Shedrick announced postgame that he is going to return for a sixth year, but this team is going to look completely different. You got Trey Johnson coming in. You got Cam Scott coming in. What's going to happen?
6'6" shooting guard, 6'5" shooting guard.
What's going to happen at the guard position, right? You know, Tyrese Hunter, he said, I've got to get my body right, and I've got to see what the future holds for me, whether it's coming back to Texas or going to the NBA draft. You know, you just knew in this locker room, Dylan Mitchell as well has a decision to make, that this group, it's done. You know, as far as this group and you know, maybe pursuing next year, right? So we'll get into it a little bit and take it or leave it. What do you build around? A lot of questions. You will see what this roster shapes up. But yeah, Rodney Terry felt, Chip, and he said it, that he thought this was a second weekend team. They don't make it to the second weekend. And it's just a tough pill to swallow because finally, Chip, they were playing the type of defense that Rodney Terry had just implored his group to play all year and hit shots when it mattered.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Dylan Mitchell, I don't know what to make of Dylan Mitchell. I don't know where his game got better this year. I mean, I know he got more minutes and proportionally his scoring average and rebound average went up. I don't know if it was, I mean, they didn't know what they were getting from Dylan Mitchell from night to night. He didn't have a go-to move. He didn't have a counter move. I thought he did have one when I saw him hit that turnaround jump shot in the orange-white game on the baseline. I was like, oh, okay, look at Dylan Mitchell. But he plays 26 minutes against Tennessee. 4 rebounds, 2 points. I don't know.
I will say this, Chip, really quick. Offensively, didn't give you a ton, but he was part of that job, part of the duo of facing Connect, that he did his job there. But to your point, just your broader point, in terms of the growth offensively, I'm with you. But just want to at least give him credit there that he and Weaver were part of that duo that shut down
Connect. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I love Kendall Weaver because he just gives you so much energy and effort, and it shows up with him driving and getting fouled and hitting 6 of 6 free throws. He hit a 3-pointer in the Tennessee game, finished with 13 points. He's, you know, just a huge energy toughness guy. I thought he and Brock were really instrumental from a toughness standpoint in the win over Colorado State. I think if you're Rodney Terry, you've got to build up Kendall Weaver, build his confidence. He's got to be on the floor for you. You know, if we're kind of doing comparisons and we're going to transition to the women here, you know, he's Shea Holly. You know, he's just going to give you relentless efforts and defense. And if he can just get his shot going the way it was his freshman year at UT Arlington, which I don't see why he won't. I think he'll be just an incredibly different player next year. And a real weapon. You put him with, you know, Trey Johnson and Cam Scott, you know, those two guys at 6'6 and 6'5 as shooting guards. And then, you know, Caden Shedrick is your frontline guy. And then you've got to nail it in the portal to make sure that you are capable of, you know, contending in the SEC, because that's the standard at Texas, is you need to be contending for your conference championship and you need to be right around the top 10 in the country in whatever sport you are. So if that's not happening on the regular, then, you know, we'll have a different conversation. But yeah, I do think there is some things to be excited about for next year.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, when you get a guy like Trey Johnson coming in, certainly room to be excited. Someone you think is a pure scorer. Yeah, go for it, Chet.
Yeah. I mean, my college roommate's son played on that Lake Highlands team with Trey Johnson that won the state championship. And everything I've heard is the guy's a great teammate. He's unbelievable in the locker room, in addition to the five-star talent and the ability to, you know, fill up a stat sheet. So really excited about him and Cam Scott. I mean, those guys can both get it done. So let's see what Texas can do in the portal. I mean, what would your number one priority be in the portal?
Point guard. I'm sorry.
I agree.
I think we were kind of talking about this, speculating, you know, right before Sark's presser, some of the media who cover basketball, that, you know, is there a thought of maybe moving Kendall Weaver over? He played a little bit of point at UTA, but no, I don't. With what we think the ceiling for next year could be, given the guys we just talked about, right? I don't think Kendall Weaver. I am more intrigued with the idea of playing Trey Johnson at the three and Kendall Weaver at the two and finding a point guard than I am playing Kendall Weaver at the one and Trey Johnson at the two. I think point guard, and I'll be honest, whether that is, I like the idea of another wing that can stretch the defense and shoot. But I, in terms of a point guard, I am looking at if Trey Johnson is the scorer that we believe he is, and, you know, guys like Caden Shedrick are coming back, I like the idea of a defensive point guard who can facilitate. Isn't necessarily looking for his shot. Max had to be that guy because we know what this team was made of, right? They needed someone to take those shots and score. But you have those guys in place now, right? Like, I think there's someone who needs to be that facilitator, be that person who's a floor general and can play defense again. I am really intrigued, Chip, and I'll pass back to you on this, of the idea of two guards, meaning your point guard and Weaver, who can defend the perimeter really well. So I think that's going to serve the team a great deal.
Yeah, I agree. And that's going to be, priority number one, in my opinion, because Max Asemus he should have been off the ball. You know, he should have been coming off screens and getting not in easy pick and pop, pick and roll situations where defenders can, you know, blitz that and stuff him. I mean, he needs to be running around, coming off screens, and he was having to handle the ball, you know, too much because Tyrese Hunter was all over the place. And he was a turnover machine even in the Tennessee game, Tyrese Hunter. You know, 6 turnovers, 3 of them on inbounds passes. It's like, do you practice your inbounds plays? I mean, yeah, that was tough. All right, let's move on to the Texas women, because they did handle business after losing in the round of 32 a year ago to Louisville and Haley Van Lith. And they got drummed in that game, if you'll remember. I got boat race 71-53. They handled business against Alabama. Alabama had some really quick guards who made it tough on Shayla Gonzalez and Shea Holly, but the inside game of Aaliyah Moore, Madison Booker getting whatever she wanted in the first half with Kevin Durant watching, pretty cool. And the just kind of the three-headed monster of Texas down low with Taylor Jones, Deanna Gaston, Amina Muhammad, which is going to be absolutely necessary heading into this Sweet 16 game against Gonzaga, Eric. And this Gonzaga team is 32-3, and people are going to say, oh, who do they play? Well, their conference is not great, but they did play and beat Stanford in December. They beat the same Alabama team that Texas just beat by 10. And they have all seniors. Like they are, and they have twins at the guard position in the Truong twins, Kaylin and Kaylee. And they average, like together, they average more than 10 assists a game. This game scares me. Now, they don't have the size that Texas does, but Yvonne Ejim, who is their leading scorer, she's 6'1". She averages 19.9 and 8.8 rebounds per game. She is relentless, Eric. And if Texas doesn't, you know, Aaliyah Moore is kind of, and Deanna Gaston are kind of the matchups for her. If they don't come in totally locked in, this could be a really rough situation for Texas.
I'll piggyback off of what you just said there, because my point that I was going to lead into is I think this is a Taylor Jones, Amina Muhammad, Deanna Gaston, Aaliyah Moore. Does this game, Chip, and maybe, you know, I'm reaching here, does it remind you a little bit of Kansas State in the sense that it feels like everything kind of runs through their big and Aoka Lee? And of course, they've got talent in the guards and whatnot. That's just kind of the feeling I get from this matchup. But no, I mean, listen, you talk about a Gonzaga team. When you amass that type of record in regular season, you know you're not going to beat yourself, right? I mean, sure, yes, the competition, not necessarily the best in the league. But as you said, they beat Stanford. That's a real deal team, right? So really interested to see kind of, in my mind, I think everything runs through the bigs. And we've talked about it on this podcast. You know, Vic Schaefer kind of, I don't want to term it a love-hate relationship because I think, you know, obviously you love all your players, right? But a bit of an up-and-down relationship with Taylor Jones. I mean, at times, you know, wanted to push her to get more out of her, right? So I think her, along with, as you mentioned, Deanna Gaston and Aaliyah Moore, going to be a pivotal matchup there down low. I guess, as I talked about last episode, I have Texas making it to Final Four, so I do believe they'll win this game. But in some ways, again, it just reminds me of the Kansas State game when you got a big like that down low. Of course, Aoka Lee much taller. I think Gonzaga's big, but still a big down low, you know, everything kind of runs through. That to me, I think is interesting because you kind of live and die in a sense, almost in a sense, even like an Iowa State, right? With Audie Crooks.
Right.
In terms of everything runs through them. So definitely interesting to see how things play out.
And they rebound like their life depends on it. And those teams scare me because they just are relentless. And the thing about, you know, Yvonne Ejim and Brianna Maxwell, who's their second leading scorer, they have five players who average double figures, by the way. And they shoot it at a high clip. They shoot the three as well. It's a full meal deal with Gonzaga. And both Yvonne, in the win over Stanford, both Yvonne Ejim and Brianna Maxwell each had 27 points. Like, and that's going up against Cameron Brink, the All-American at Stanford, the 6'4", you know, center for the Cardinal. And this will be a fun matchup. I mean, Texas defensively is going to have to be at its best because I thought they, you know, Vic Schaefer said they didn't have the edge he wanted to see at the beginning of the Drexel game, and they ended up winning that game by 40. But Alabama kind of shut down Texas's guards. It had to get done inside. Maddie Booker was really good in the first half. She opened 6 of 7. She, you know, didn't have a outstanding second half, but Aaliyah Moore did. This team finds ways to win. They're going to have to really be locked in all five to get this done, because that's a pretty relentless group there. That game, by the way, is the 29th, which is what, Friday, and it's at 9 at night because they're out in Portland, which is essentially a home game for Gonzaga coming from Spokane. All right, Eric, you ready for some love it or leave it?
I am ready for some take it or leave it and love it or leave it. Whatever you, Chip, I'm just a guest in your world. Whatever you want to call it, I'm here for it, Chip.
You ready for some take it or leave it? I'm ready. All right, let's do it. Let's do it. We'll do it next right here on the Flagship Podcast with Eric Henry and Chip Brown.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, and if you're watching us on the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel, we will roll on with some take it or leave it. Eric? Anthony Hill Jr., will be Texas's starting middle linebacker in 2024. You taking this or are you leaving this?
Chip, I'm taking it, and here's why. Steve Sarkisian said if the season started today, with the caveat that it doesn't start today, Anthony Hill would be the starting middle linebacker. Chip, how many athletes on the face of this planet can do the things that Anthony Hill can do? And to have to unseat that person, that's a tough ask. That's all I'm saying. So that's not to say that maybe, you know, things can't happen between now and fall camp that might make them want to shift elsewhere. But if you're telling me that I got to place my money on someone unseating Anthony Hill, nah, I will take it all day, Chip. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to take this. There might be some situational things, maybe against power running teams. We'll see what Kendrick Blackshire can do. But against Michigan, Georgia, Kentucky, maybe you have some situational stuff going on at middle linebacker, although I still love Anthony Hill Jr. being right in the middle of everything, picking up people and throwing them down. So I am taking this.
All right. Question number two, back to hoops. Other than Kendall Weaver and Caden Shedrick, who are returning, you're not excited about any other players returning to the Longhorns next season. Chip Brown, take it or leave it.
Yeah, I'm going to take this. I'm not excited about any other players. I mean, if Tyrese Hunter, who I just went back and looked at his numbers. They're almost identical from his freshman year at Iowa State, which, you know, he's averaging 10, 11 points. But I just didn't see him elevate his game on a consistent basis. This, you got to have three scoring options. He needed to be the third one. Dylan Mitchell, I love Dylan Mitchell. He's a great kid. He means well. I just don't, he gets lost on defense at times. He never really developed an offensive game. So yeah, I'm going to take this. Now I am very excited about Trey Johnson and Cam Scott, but they're not returning players. So Eric, what say you?
Yeah, Chip, I think I'm forced to take it only because we don't really know the status of Tyrese Hunter and Dylan Mitchell. And as you said, I mean, Tyrese and Dylan are great guys. I mean, obviously, again, I've seen DM from the time he was, you know, 15 in Tampa. And Tyrese Hunter, I mean, you know, certainly. And Tyrese, I got to give him credit just from a media perspective. And a guy who, even in his worst moment, you know, stood there, answered the questions, you know, took it like a man. You know, he didn't run away from the question. So you always appreciate that as a media member. But A, you know, don't know their status. And as you kind of talked about with Tyrese, I mean, there was a progression in his game from sophomore year to junior year in terms of shooting percentage, but you just didn't see it on a consistent basis. And the same thing with Dylan Mitchell. You saw more of it, right? You know, in terms of playing almost 30 minutes a game as opposed to the 17 and a half he played as a freshman, but you didn't see that consistency, right? So Kendall Weaver, especially, and Kendall didn't want to acknowledge at the time because obviously he was hurt by the loss, but he had a damn good game on the highest stage, right? So that, and Caden Shedrick is someone who, Caden made this point, Chip, hasn't had a full offseason to just work on his game in a while. You know,
right. Right. Yeah, the offseason shoulder surgeries.
Right. So I have to take this as well, Chip.
All right. Take it or leave it. Number three, Eric, the Texas women will be fighting for their lives against 32-3 Gonzaga in the Sweet 16. You taking it or leaving it?
No, I'm taking it. I mean, I think they're going to win, but I don't think it's going to be hell. You could say against Alabama, right? I mean, they weren't fighting for their lives, but they got pushed. And Gonzaga's a better team than the Crimson Tide, and they're heading to Portland. And I understand, you know, it's certainly nearly a home game for Gonzaga, right? And listen, Portland's a great city, especially for women's sports, right? You know, I understand why you have a site like that, but it's a tough ask, especially in this environment. So, yeah, I think they win, but it's not going to be a cakewalk.
Yeah, yeah. This game scares me because they're just so senior-laden, you know? They got this two-headed monster at point guard in Kay Lynn and Kaylee Truong. And like I said, you look at their box scores and it's always six or seven assists from each. So, you know, Madison Booker, as good as she is, and she's the Big 12 player of the year, it's still new to her. And she's carrying a lot of weight. That's why the players around her need to step up and make plays like they did in the K-State game at the Big 12 tournament when Shea Holly hits that three with a minute 13 left, because we talked about it against OU with the Big 12 regular season title on the line. There was Madison Booker trying to do everything herself. She's one of nine in the, you know, shooting in the fourth quarter, and her teammates who are the veterans need to be the ones stepping up. Texas cannot afford to get into a situation like that where Madison Booker feels like she has to do everything, because that's too much. It's too much to put on her. And I think Gonzaga is a good enough defensive team that they're going to make life difficult for Madison Booker. So it's going to be a great matchup. I'm taking it just like Eric. And thanks everybody. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Flagship Podcast. For Eric Henry, I am Chip Brown. Till next time, we'll see you over at horns247.com. If you're not an annual member at horns247, oh my goodness, you're late to the party, but it's still a great time to join because we are in spring football. And of course, things are all moving seemingly in the right direction in all of Texas athletics. So make sure that you are joining us over at horns247.com. For Eric, I'm Chip. Until next time, stay safe and keep the faith.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.